We are holding on Tess Ahmed Aleph's top line. We're finishing off over here with the braisa that we quoted on. We had a long braisa on Bava Ahmed Aleph that discussed the four rishuyas, Rishus Yochid, Rishus Rabim, Karmelus, Makom Ptur, and we mentioned the braisa had said something. We discussed that part of the braisa yesterday about that a person can be standing on the skupa. We talked about in the braisa that a person can be standing on the skupa, on the stoop, and be giving some, which we discussed, what is it exactly, and we ended up saying that it is a makom ptur, and therefore he's able to give something to the balabayas inside the house or inside the mavoi, or take something from him, because you're allowed to transfer between makom ptur and rishus yochid, and the same thing between him and the oni for the same reason, as long as he doesn't transfer back and forth between them, because midrabanan, we don't want him to do that, because people are going to care less for Shabbos.
And the skupa is less than 4x4.
So we said the skupa has to be less than 4x4, and it has to be at least 3 tefachim, it has to be more than 3 tefachim above the ground of Rosh Hashanah. That makes it a makom ptur. Well, it also has to be, we also mentioned briefly that it would have to be outside the lechi that makes the mavri permissible to carry. And otherwise, it's inside the lechi, then it's put itself part of the mavri. Okay. So then it would be part of Rishus Yochid, then he wouldn't be able to transfer something to Rishus Yochid. Right. Okay. So then we said in the braisa, Acherim Omrim, we said Acherim had said, Acherim usually being Rav Meir, Askupa Meshamesh is Shtei Rishuyas, but this Askupa is actually functions as two different Rishuyas. Sometimes it's Rishus Yochid, sometimes it's Rishus Yavim. Bizman Shah Pesach Pasuach Kilifnim, when the door is open, then it counts as part of the inside, it counts as part of Rishus Yochid. Pesach no, Kalachut, and when the door is closed, no, literally locked, it doesn't have to be locked, so say, just that the door is closed, then it's considered like outside. So in other words, the Acherim are saying, not like we said, that so the Acherim are saying, in other words, that the Eskupa, which we were talking about, is so we were saying before that's a Makom Ptur, but the Acherim are saying, no, there can actually be a scenario where the Eskupa is sometimes Rishus Yochid and sometimes Rishus Rabim. So what is that case? So first of all, the Gemara starts with the assumption, according to Rashi, the Gemara is starting with the assumption over here that we're talking about an eskupa in front of a mavri. Like we said before, that we're talking about, you have a mavri, you have a mavri that's enclosed on three sides, which, by the way, just the fact that it's enclosed on three sides, according to most Rishonim, makes already Rishus Yochid Daraisa. Only the Rabbanon do you need a lechi or kora or something in order to be master it, in order to be able to carry it. On a Daraisa level, just the fact that it has walls on three sides, that the walls of the chaseris, but open in here, would be enough to make it a Rishus Yochid on a Daraisa level, according to most Rishonim.
It's just adjacent to the wall, beyond the limits of the walls, but exactly at the limits of the walls.
No, I'm not sure what you mean exactly at the limit of the walls. You have a mavri, there's a bunch of houses, each of which open into a chaser. Then you have a bunch of such chaseris are arranged in a U shape around a dead-end street. So you have the street is surrounded in by three walls, surrounded on three sides by the walls of the chaseris. You have a chaser, and next to it another chaser, and next to it another, and so forth, going all around three sides of this mavri. Then you have the front, the open end of it opens out into Rishus Rabim.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So the mavri is made of what? Houses?
The mavri is made up of the walls of chaseris, which in turn houses open into. So the Gemara starts with the assumption then that we're talking about an eskupa, we're talking about a front step, a stoop, whatever you want to call it, in front of a mavri, and we're assuming that it's the kind of thing you made a lechi for the mavri to be able to carry inside the mavri. Now, the question is that usually the situation would be that the lechi, if you're going to be making a lechi, usually it's going to be further in than the eskupa. Or actually, the truth is, Rashi uses the expression lechi and nimina eskupa, but what does that mean exactly? One possibility is, sometimes what you have is the mavri. Now, what you have is like this. First of all, when you have a lechi, the rule is you're only allowed to carry up until the inner edge of the lechi. So if, let's say, for example, the entrance to the mavri is here. So here's the mavri. You have the street. They have the houses and chaseris and whatever on three sides of it. The street is out here. You put a lechi over here. You would only be able to carry until here, only until where the lechi begins, not where it ends.
But if it's a string.
a lechi has a vertical pole. A koda we'll talk about soon. That's where there's two possibilities what you can put up for a mow. You can put up a lechi, which is a horizontal, which is a vertical pole, yeah. at one end of the mow, on one side or the other. Or you can put a koda, which is a horizontal beam going across the front of it. So usually the lechi is going to be further in than the eskupa. Now, one possibility, Mefoshim discussed over here, is very often, and Rashi himself is going to mention it further along, actually, is very often you have the wall, the fourth wall of the mavri itself is not completely open. Very often what you have is the walls of the mavri. You have, again, three sides of it are made up of the walls of the chaseris, and then you have the fourth side, very often you have it also enclosed a little bit. You have the water, you know, you have it partially enclosed on the fourth side, and then you have most of it is open and it goes out, so this is what happens. So in that case, those things themselves count as the lechi. Fine, you don't need another lechi in that case, but nevertheless, the rule still applies that you can't, that you can only carry from the, you can only carry up to the inner edge of the lechi. So therefore, if the eskupa is between those two bits of wall that stick out on the fourth side, then you're still not going to be able to carry there.
The eskupa doesn't take over?
No, what should it take over? It itself is not a lechi. It itself is not a koda. So here, you know what? Let me show you a diagram that might help make it a little. Let me show you a diagram that might help make it a little clearer what we're talking about over here. Here's what we're talking about. I'll show you each in turn. So you have over here. There's the mavri. And you have the entrance of it. So you have the gray area is the eskupa. Very often you're going to have that you have the walls themselves go in a little bit on the fourth side, and therefore that counts as a lechi. That's the first diagram over there.
With the lechi.
In that case, you don't need a lechi. In that case, the walls themselves count. If you're going to have a lechi, then it's going to be the full width of the eskupa, whether it's only going to be at the beginning of it. Either way, you're only going to be able to carry until the beginning of the lechi.
Those are the chaseris.
The chaseris are around here. We're not actually showing them, but we assume that the walls of the mavri are made up of chaseris.
The main thing is that people live over here and they go out to Shushanabim over here.
No.
This way.
People are going out to Shushanabim through here.
Oh, that way. Okay.
Yes.
Where is Shushanabim?
Shushanabim is out here at the bottom.
Okay.
It's out here at the bottom.
Here.
Yeah.
Where's lechi exactly?
So the lechi in the first one, you don't have a separate lechi.
Right.
You just have the two walls that go in that form a lechi. In the other ones, you actually have a lechi.
It would be on this side.
So again, we have this black thing over here that either is the complete width of the eskupa or is only a little bit of it. But either way, you're only going to put it at the beginning. If you're going to have a full width one, then it's going to be the full width of it. And if you're going to have a small one, then it's going to be only at the beginning of it. And either way, you're not carrying on the eskupa. But that's the question, then. Why
we're making this lechi something to do with the eskupa? The eskupa, it has to do more with the mavri.
The eskupa is the entrance. It's like a step in and out of the mavri. Right. Fine, but you have to make a lechi in order to be able to carry in the mavri.
But the lechi is actually going to be a part of on the one the wall of the house in the chaseris.
No. Well, it's going to be on the wall. It's going to be on one of the walls of the mavri as it's about to go out to the shusharab.
Right, that's the point until you can walk
up through. Until there, you can carry. Right. So that's the question. So you're going to say the alpha gab the less button the less lay lechi. So you're going to say that you're allowed to carry on this eskupa even though it's not within the lechi. Didn't Rav Chama Bar Guria say in the name of Rav that the area inside the doorway of the mavri, which in this case would be the eskupa, because usually the eskupa is within the doorway, you need a lechi. You need another lechi to be master. In other words, not enough the lechi that you have. For the mavri as a whole. You need a separate lechi, or either that, or to begin with, you need to place your lechi outside of that doorway, in other words, on the side facing Rosh Hashanah, in order to be master to carry inside the entrance itself, inside the entryway. Well, either you'd have two lechi, or to begin with, you would put one lechi on the outside wall of the mavri. So let's say, for example, in our scenario over here, let's say you have the mavri is here, so let's say if you put the lechi over here, then fine, you've covered. You're able to carry in this area as well, which is the actual entryway to the mavri.
Because you see from outside.
So the point is, you can carry up till the beginning of the lechi, up to the beginning of the lechi. You're allowed to carry
inside beginning.
Inside beginning. Marshall, by the way, has a whole explanation over here where he wants to say basically that the area of the Eskupa itself should count almost as a separate Mavri, and therefore the Gemara is assuming that should be a separate Lechi. A number of Achronim asked on him on that, so here we're talking about the Eskupa only needs to be 4 Tfachim wide in order to be a separate Lashus, whereas to be considered a separate Mavri and actually require a separate Lechi anyhow, it would have to be 4 Amos wide.
Well, you
could still put something. You would just have to anchor it more securely in the ground. That's all. And a lucky doesn't have to be next to a wall. All right. So anyway, so the point is, so obviously we can't mean that you're allowed to carry on this, is that according to Acherim, the Eskupa can count as the Shusha Yachid just by virtue of the fact that when the door is open, it's considered like the inside because it's still past the lechi. You shouldn't be able to carry this. The Chitema Delespe Dalad al Dalad. So you might answer, okay, very simple. Maybe that only applies if the Eskupa is itself big enough to be a Rishus. But we're talking about over here, let's say it's less than 4x4, like we said yesterday. Nope. Even if that area is not 4x4 Tvachim, Sarech Lechi Achal Acheri. You still need another Lechi outside of it in order to be master it before you go to Rishus Rabbim, right? So it doesn't work. So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, after all, you're right, we are talking about an Eskupa of a Mavri. By the way, this is according to Rashi, that the Gemara knew all along it is an Eskupa of a Mavri, but we were wondering how it works in terms of Lechi. The Gemara is going to give a different answer that you didn't use a Lechi, but rather you use a Koiva, which is the other way of making a Mavri Mutter. Which is, you have, a horizontal beam running along the front of the Mavri. But the Tosfos actually discusses that and says not necessarily. The Gemara may have started with the assumption that the Eskupa we're talking about, the Nachayim are saying, it can be either Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah, could be any kind of Eskupa, whether in front of a house, whether in front of a chaser. For those a lechi doesn't really work, because for those you would need something actually wide enough to constitute a fourth wall of its own. But nevertheless, the Gemara had used the word lechi in the sense that if let's say you were to try to put a lechi on either side, let's say a surah or whatever, but still you wouldn't be allowed to carry within that, only up to that. So anyway, so according to Tosfos, the Gemara wasn't sure to begin with whether it's a house or a chutz or a mavoi, and now it's coming down definitely on the side that's a mavoi. According to Rashi, it knew all along that it's a mavoi, and now we're just clarifying how we're doing it. Okay.
Does the Eskupa have to go from one lechi to the other, or it can stop?
In the case of a mavoi, you don't need two lechayayim, you only need one. So there's nothing to talk about.
The Eskupa has to be the entire width of the
Mavu? Not necessarily. Okay. Practically speaking, it probably would be, but yeah. Okay. So,
it wasn't those days, I think, to have a scoop before Mavu, or just this happened? Just one.
A lot of times you would have like that, because you want to have, after all, a Mavu, if the Mavu is going to be on the same level as Rosh Hashanah Abim, then it's going to be very easy for people from Rosh Hashanah Abim to just wander in there, or just use it as a shortcut, not a shortcut really, or whatever, to get out of the street, but whatever, like to use it like as a traffic bypass or whatever, and therefore, for that reason also, often you have doors on it, which is why we're talking about the doors being open and closed, but yeah. So like this, if it was in a scope, it helps delineate it more clearly. Once the door is closed, right. But here we're talking about the scope itself, right. Okay. Anyway, so Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, talk about a scope of Mavri. What we're talking about over here, after all, is an Eskupa of a Mavri. But what it is instead of a Lechi, we're using a Koda to be master of the Mavri. A Koda now only has to be the rule. Now, a Lechi, there's no particular width that has to be. But a koda, you have a minimum width. It has to be one tefach wide at least. But the eskupa is usually wider than that. So therefore, chetzi in the koda, a chetzi shein in the koda. It comes out therefore that half of the eskupa is going to be covered by the koda, and half is not. Now, usually, what you're going to have is Rashi describes. You're usually going to have that, in this situation, the case is, let's say they put the koda, let's suppose that the eskupa is less than four, let's say it's 3 tefachim wide, because otherwise, again, we get into questions of it being kindless or what have you. Let's say we want it to be either Rishos Rabim or Rishos Yachid, as we say. So let's say it's 3 tefachim wide, but you have a koda only 1 tefach wide. Suppose that you put the koda so that it only covers the inner tefach of that eskupa, and then the outer two trochim of the eskupa are outside the curtain. So the kiruya, so that's what we have to figure out. So the kiruya klapik pnim, the kura is towards the inner side of the kura is towards the inner side of the eskupa. So therefore, so pesach pasuach shelafnim. So therefore, when the door is open, then the area underneath the kura is considered like the inside, not the whole eskupa, but the part that is under the kura. Now Rashi points out, you have a machloikus in Erevin, whether in fact you are allowed, we said with the lechi, you're not allowed to carry anywhere from the inner edge of the lechi and further out, but when it comes to the kura, you actually have a machloikus in Erevin, whether you're allowed to carry under the kura or not. One way of looking at it is that you're not allowed to, the same as the lechi. The other way of looking at it is there's two possible reasons why you should be allowed to. One way of looking at it is because the purpose of the kura is for a heter, that people should recognize that you can't carry beyond here. So in that case, the outer edge of the kura functions as that, because when you're in Rishos Adam, you see the outer edge of the kura, and you know that here's where the new area begins. Or because the idea is the kura functions as sort of a roof. And we have a rule, P tikra, yerid b'soyfen, that the edge of the ceiling is considered to come down and form a mechitza over there. So either way, according to that way of looking at it, you would be allowed to carry under the korda. So in that case, when the door is open, then good. You have a korda over there. It's functioning as a korda to be makir, the mugri, to carry in. Therefore, you're allowed to carry up till, including the outer edge of it. Therefore, Kilafnim. Therefore, that area is considered like inside the mavri itself, and you're allowed to carry in it, and you're allowed to carry between the mavri and it. So then it would be part of the Rishos HaYachid, part of the rest of the mavri, which has now become a Rishos HaYachid by virtue of the Koyra. On the other hand, when the door is open, Pesach, no Kalachot, but when the door is closed, and when the door is closed, so now what happens is that, so now even the area under the Koyra, first of all, the kura is not functioning as the kura is not functioning to be mapped to the mavri anymore because the mavri is now closed with its doors. But second, more to the point, also is Rashi explains in order to say tikkur yerid b'soyfim, you would have to have there would be an area at least four tefachim between the mechitzas. And here you don't have, because here you have the door and then you have a kura which is one tefach wide outside the door. Therefore, you don't have enough space over there to be saying Pitikra Yerid B'Sosim, so therefore that area under the Kura now becomes part of Rishos Rabbim.
What's
the difference has to be to be able to say Tikra? So the Pitikra Yerid B'Sosim, you need four Tvachim. So under the Kura, that's the point. We're talking about under the Kura. So that's the thing. In other words, so now it would be, well, maybe not Rishos Rabbim. Maybe it would be, it would be like the outside, meaning you're not allowed to transfer anything between it and the Mavri, because now it's not part of the Rishos HaYachid anymore, because now we can't take particular of the place. Okay, maybe, whether we mean that in that case it would actually be part of Rishos Rabbim, maybe. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's under a Kura, but the Kura is only a tefach fit. We said that a Rishos Rabbim can't be roofed over, but does that mean even if it only has a thing, a tefach thick over it, not necessarily. So it might be truly part of Rishos Rabbim, but anyway, the point is,
it would have to have
the kura have to be at least four tefachim wide, and then we could say p'tik or yerid b'soyfim, and then we could say that it's as if the area under that kura is considered a little room of its own. But because it's less than four tefachim, we can't do that. In fact, Rashi says that is why we have to say it's talking about an eskupa of a mavri. Says Rashi, because a house usually the entire thickness of the doorway is covered over with a lintel. So it's not like with a mavri where you only have a kura there in order to be mocked with a mavri to carry in a house. You usually have a lintel covering the entire thickness of the wall. So therefore, the doorway of the wall in which you have the doorway. So therefore, you would still be able to say pitikur yerid b'soyfin, because between the door and the outside edge of the mav of the mashkif, you'd still have four tefachim, and that would be enough to say pitikur yerid b'soyfin.
You see in the streets here, you see two poles when you enter a house. I mean, when you enter the garden, two poles and a string on.
That's a pesach. That's a tzuris pesach. That's a different thing. That's not the lechi or the kura that we're talking about here. The lechi or the kura is strictly used for a mavri, strictly used for a suite that's closed in on three sides, where you have walls on it on three sides, and it's open on the fourth. Mm-hmm. what you see around people's houses or whatever, the sort of the, what you see around people, the entrance to people's front yards or whatever, the sort of surpass that, that's to make it allowed to be able to carry in their front yard on travel.
That's the best. I mean,
that's
fine, because the sort of surpass counts as a wall.
So why do you make a difference between the width in the Korah in the case of the Mabui and the string in the case of the...
Because in the case of a Mabui, since you're only using a Korah, then you need something thick enough to be a Heker. In the case of a Tzuras HaPesach, you don't. If you have a Tzuras HaPesach, then you don't. Tzuras HaPesach has different rules. But that's more topic from a Sefer Erevin when we get to the address to Shem. Okay. Anyway, so again, Rashi explains that the difference is that you don't have four tefachim over here. Tosfos says it's more because when the door is closed, then the korah is not really functioning to be master of the mavui, so therefore it doesn't really have any function. You can't say on it particular b'sosim. The whole rule would apply only if it was either four tefachim wide or it's functioning as a korah, and here it's neither.
So when actually you want to bring a package from the iskufa to inside the mabui, first you have to open the door.
You would have to open the door, yeah. According to Acherim, yeah, you would.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, the Mefoshim say, since we don't find the Chachamim arguing with Acherim on that, and since the Gemara is spending so much time analyzing Acherim's opinion, that must mean the halacha is like it. So, yeah. So we have both cases are true, though. We have, yesterday we learned that the iskufa could be makom ptur, and now we're learning. On the other hand, there's a different scenario where the iskufa can be Rishus Yachid or Rishus Adam, as the case may be. Okay.
That means you wouldn't have to carry from the iskufa in cycles. It's Rishus Yachid or Rishus Adam.
Well,
always.
No. If
the
door stays open, then it's considered, then it's still under the, then the area under the korah, the area under the korah is considered part of the Rishus Yachid. Not the rest of the iskufa, right. Anything that's not under the korah, anything that's outside of the korah, right, is off limits. But we're talking about the area that's under the korah.
Right, but we're not allowed to go from Shishem to Shishem or the opposite.
Or, right.
So is this helping us? Are we going through Makom Ptur here?
No. According to Acherim, we're not dealing with Makom Ptur over here. What we're saying is... What we're saying is that what we're saying is when we say that this area is either Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah, depending whether the doors are open, so far what we're saying is it depends. If we're talking about that there's no Lachi, there's a korah,
right.
But you're allowed to, we're following the opinion that you're allowed to carry up until the outer edge of the korah. So as long as the door is open, then you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to carry up to the outer edge of the korah. So here's the mavri. You have the korah is hanging over here. So you're allowed to carry up to here. But when the door is closed, and it's closed on the inside of the korah, then this area underneath the korah becomes off-limits.
Right.
As if you didn't have a korah. Because it comes from the korah.
Okay. But either way, you can't carry a load outside.
No, of course not. Okay. Rav Ashi, actually, you could even say we're talking about an iskufa of a house, where the whole thing usually is roofed over. But in that case, then, didn't we just say that in that case, you have usually four tefachim, and therefore you'd have enough for pizza kriyo b'sotim anyway? No. Suppose the case is he used for covering over the front entrance of the house. He used for the lintel. He used two pieces of wood. Neither one is four tefachim wide. The ein bein zulazu shloisha, there's less than three tefachim between one and the other one. So when the door is open, we can say lavud, but when it's closed or not, the delas ba'emsa, the door closes in such a way that it lands between the two of them. That when the door is closed, you have one of those strips of wood is inside it and one is outside it. So now what we wind up with is like this. So when the door is open, then well, so then what we say is because there are Rashi explains like this. If it was one solid piece, four tefachim wide, then it wouldn't matter that the door closes in between it. Because unlike the mavri, where the purpose of the korah is only to master the mavri to carry in, and therefore the door closing behind it makes a difference and makes it that it's no longer functioning as a korah, here you actually have an actual roof of four tefachim. The fact that you don't have an area open of four tefachim between the door and the outside edge of it wouldn't matter. You would still consider, you would treat it for purposes of halacha as if the door wasn't there, and therefore you have that area under that thing would be considered one little room of four tefachim in length, and pichik or yod v'sosim on both sides, and you'd be able to catch.
That's only when the door's together, which is...
No. Well, I'm saying, Rashi is saying, if it was one solid piece on top, then it wouldn't matter whether there's a door there. Because it's not two solid pieces, now we have to apply lavud. because they're less than 3 feet far from apart. So now it makes a difference whether there's a door between them. If there's no door, if the door is open, then we can say lovered between them. Now they count as though they were 1 4 tefach wide piece, and pitchikli yod v'sosim on both sides, and therefore you're good. But when the door is closed, now that breaks the lovered between the two pieces. Now you don't have a roof of 4 tefachim over here on the outside, and therefore you can't carry underneath it.
For example, be a door that opens in the house that comes out of the wall. It's when you close it, it's going between the door.
Like a pocket door, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know if that's the kind of case that we're talking about. I mean, pastors are talking about a swinging door, but it swings in such a way, the hinges of it are placed in such a way that when it's closed, it's made in such a way that when it's closed, you have the two tefachim of the lintel on one side of it and two on the other.
And if the door doesn't go all the way up to the...
No, that wouldn't make a difference, I don't think. Same way as for example, the pashtus wouldn't, as long as the door itself is 10 tefachim tall, then no, it wouldn't make a difference. Same way as by a sukkah, for example, we say the walls just have to be 10 tefachim tall, and it doesn't matter how much aspect we say, yeah, it's considered as though the walls are pulled up. Yeah. Okay, so that's the case. So the olim b'skupas bayis haskin, and Rav Ashi says, we're talking about that it is the skup of a house, so if we're going to shekir of a state kodesh, suppose that he covered the doorway, which includes the skupa, with two beams, she'en b'zura bar ve'en b'zura bar, neither one is 4 tefachim wide, ve'en ben zula zur shlesha, there's less than 3 tefachim between one and the other, the delos b'ensa, and the door closes, and when the door is closed, it winds up between the two of them, then, petach pasuach kelefnim, then when the door is open, then the whole area under those beams is considered like the inside, because now you have 4 tefachim by a flying lover, and pitzikur yer b'sosim on both sides, and petach no, when the door is closed, kelachus, then the area under the outer kurta is considered like the outside, because now you don't have lovewood between them, so now you only have 2 tefachim. Now you only have 2 or 3 or whatever tefachim, because less than 4, and that's not enough to take the tikra.
Better sell your builders to.
I guess so.
You're
yeah.
talking about sort of smaller area which the person can't even fit under there, so you know we could stand exactly.
But nevertheless, you could still have. Let's say, imagine there was a package over there. Imagine they deliver a package right before Shabbos. Let's say you didn't have a chance to take it in. Can you bring it in on Shabbos or not? Let's say. Okay. We said in the mission, the last thing we said in the Braisa was Bimhosa is Skupa Gvoya Yudur Chavadale. If the Skupa is 10 tefachim tall and 4 tefachim, 4 by 4 tefachim in size, Harez the Rishus Vasma, then it's a Rishus of its own, meaning, in other words, that it's a Rishus Yachim. So, what do you mean Rishus Vasma? Why not to say it's Rishus Yachim? So you're allowed to carry between it and the house. That statement supports what Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi said. The Amr Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, Oymer Hoyer Rav Meir, Rav Meir used to say as follows, whenever you find 2 Rishuyas, as, for example, in this case, you have both of them are Rishus Yachad, they're both one Rishus, but you have the Rishus Yachad, which is the house, let's say, and then you have this Eskupa, which is large enough to be a Rishus Yachad of a sudden. Keep going. Omud Rishus Yachad. Another example would be, let's say you have a pillar in Rishus Yachad, Gavoya Yud Barachav Dalit, which is 10 tall and 4 by 4 sides. Rav Meir says, also the Kafis Olav. You're not allowed to adjust your load on it on Shabbos. Why? You would think, what's the problem? It's all Rishus Yachad. What's the problem? Zera Mishum Tail Rishus Rabin. Because make it Zera, says Rav Meir, because you might confuse it with a mound like that in Rishus Rabin. Now, suppose you have such a thing in Rishus Rabin. It would count as a Rishus Yachid. If you were to be moving something in Rishus Rabin and then you placed it on top of that, you'd be chayim. You'd be transferred from Rishus Rabin to Rishus Yachid. Therefore, a mayor says, I don't want you to be doing that in Rishus Yachid either, because you might very easily confuse it. Now, it's all Rishus Yachid, but that's the point. In other words, when we say Harez Rishus La'atma, in other words, what Acherim being Rav Meir, is saying, even though, so it's a Rishus Yachid, so you would think, what's the problem? So I'm allowed to carry between it and my own Rishus Yachid, my house. No, you're not allowed to, says Rav Meir, because that's easily confused with doing the same thing between Rishus Yachid, between that area and Rishus Rabin. Now, Tosfos says over here that the whole Gzera that Rav Meir is saying would only be when there's no actual walls around it. This is Skupa, remember, is a Rishus Yachad only by virtue of that the height of it is 10 tefachim. There's no actual, when you're standing on top of it, there's no walls. The only walls that exist around it are conceptual walls, the halakha, because we say good asset. We say we treat the height of it as though it was made into walls that surround it. But if you have an area with actual walls, for example, Tosfos gives the answer, let's say, Tosfos gives the example, let's say, between a first floor and a second floor of the house, Rav Meir is not going to ask you to carry like that. Because there you have walls around it. It's very clearly distinct from anything that you might ever find in the Rosh Hashanah.
But then it wouldn't be any scoop if there was walls.
That's the point. So therefore, that's fine. But therefore, that's what we're saying. When it's in a skupa, he makes this zera, but not when there are actual walls around it. Then he wouldn't make that zera. And therefore, Tosfos says that there wouldn't be a problem, even according to the mayor, carrying, let's say, between one floor of a house and another.
So one second, now we're saying a skupa may have walls? Is that what's implied?
No, we're saying the skupa does not have walls, and therefore the mayor has a problem with carrying from it when it's a Rosh Hashanah yachad of its own to another Rosh Hashanah yachad.
In this case, the skupa doesn't have walls, but can
a I suppose that a skupa could. If it does, then I guess it could, maybe, and if it did,
so
then
the
mayor
would be the skupa and your Rosh Hashanah yachad.
Because the skupa, then, if it had walls, the walls are clearly visible, and you can see a difference between it and a pillar and Rosh Hashanah rabbin. If not, then it's very easily confused with a pillar and Rosh Hashanah rabbin. Anyway, that's how Tosfos learns. The Rashba says another possibility that maybe even a mayor is only talking about, let's say, you have an achoser, which belongs to a couple of different partners, and maybe you have, you know, the question is, which one does the pillar belong to, if they haven't made an eruv between them, but not necessarily would he be talking about a case like this, let's say the eskupa and the house all belong to the same person, not who they made an eruv as a case, maybe not necessarily would a mayor hold that it would be a problem. On top of that, not necessarily is the halacha like a mayor in that last thing anyway. It's first said, even though usually we say halacha could have mayor bigzei roisav, but over here not necessarily, because we have a different opinion of Rav Shimon that says that you are allowed to transfer things between certain kinds of Rosh Hashanah rabbins, for example, Rosh Hashanah yachids, on Shabbos, for example, between a roof of a house and a chotzer, even if they didn't make an eruv, so you see that there's no problem even though the roof doesn't have walls around it.
Would you consider the awning of the house, which has no walls surrounding it, 4x4 would be Rosh Hashanah yachid, less than 4x4 would be...
Well, I don't know what you mean by an awning.
An awning with copper.
Yeah, what about it?
For a sukkah, for a house.
Yeah, but you certainly get to come...
Whatever, what about?
When you come into your house, you have an awning.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
Good.
Okay.
But an awning doesn't have lateral walls. What is it exactly under the awning? What is it considered?
Under the awning?
Less than 4x4.
It would depend on how high off the ground it is, I guess, in that case. Then it would be depends on how off the ground. No, it's not necessarily more than 10 guys. First of all, my house has an archway in front of it. The archway is obviously part of it.
Right.
But
some people, let's say they have, the awning that come out, a few feet out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Covering is a certain ring when you come outside.
Not
the
wall.
Right. All right. But it's attached to an extension from the wall. I would say so. Yeah.
I'm not sure about that, because it doesn't have any walls around it, so you would have to look at the actual height of it off the ground, if it's level with the ground.
Usually it's protected from rain, people walking.
No, I'm not talking about the height of the awning. I'm talking about the height of the actual area itself under the awning, the area that you're standing on.
Yeah, it's way above people's heads.
Yeah.
The area that you're standing on, no, the awning is above your head, but the area you're standing on is the ground. The concrete that you're standing on under that awning is that level with the ground out? Is that level with the rest of the ground outside? If it's a flat walk-in, then it might not be Rosh Hashanah yachid. I don't know. I mean, if it's inside your fence, if you have a fence around your house, then it's Rosh Hashanah yachid.
But I think we say bring down the sheets by its
mother. That's true. Actually, that's a good point. Okay, it's 4 fucking wide. So you're right. Maybe we'd take each other.
No, it's
a good
point. Okay.
If it's less than four, then you don't have to be tickled. Okay.
4x4,
yeah. Okay. You're right, actually. Okay, if it's 4x4, you would say P-ticker. If not, then maybe not. Yeah. Okay, all right. The next Mishnah doesn't directly have to do with Hilchos Shabbos. So now, for now, we're done with the Dinim of Eitzah and Achnasa on Shabbos. We've covered that pretty extensively, and now we're going to digress. Now we're going to digress. Actually, the next Mishnah doesn't talk about something from Hilchos Shabbos at all. We'll talk about in a second why it's in our Masechta. We're going to get back to Dinim of Eitzah and Achnasa later on in the Masechta. So let's keep in mind at least the things that we learned in these sugyas here from that days until that test. Let's not forget them, because we are going to need them again later on in the Tzaddiks and in the Kohanim. Because we just said, one second. We just said, we said at the beginning of the Masechta, the reason, we asked the reason why indeed the Masechta Shabbos begin with Yetzias HaShabbos, and we gave a few reasons over there. Because the Malacha grew us, so therefore the Tana wanted to start with it. Because, so we said, we gave reasons over there. Because the Malacha grew us, so we wanted to stress the Dinim of it. First, I'm saying like this. We discussed why we started with Yetzias HaShabbos. Now that we're done with that, now eventually we're going to get back to the dinim of Hatzav Achnosa in their proper place in the Masechta as part of the discussion of the other 39 Malachim. Now, from here on, we're basically going to be starting with things dealing with, beginning with Erev Shabbos and then moving into Shabbos itself. Now, the Mishnah after this one is going to mention that, for example, that a tailor is not allowed to walk out on Shabbos with a needle, not on Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos, with a needle stuck into his clothing, as he often does, because he may forget and carry it on Shabbos.
Yes,
right. So, and similarly, the other kinds of craftsmen are not allowed to. So for that reason, our Mishnah is going to do the same kind of thing regarding dinim of what you're not allowed to do before Mincha. So in other words, so let's learn the Mishnah, and then we'll understand. The Mishnah says, Lo yeshiv adam matei asako samach mincha. A person is not allowed to sit down in front of a barber to get a haircut, close to Mincha, which means that it means a half a shah is manis before Mincha, but we're going to see in the Gemara. We're going to have to discuss whether we mean Mincha Gdolo or Mincha Ktana. Ad she yistalo, until he davens Mincha, because otherwise he may forget and not daven. Now, again, this... So it's not only Erev Shabbos, that's the point. This applies throughout the week. The reason why we're mentioning this over here is because it's similar to the next Mishnah that says that you're not allowed to walk outside before Shabbos with a needle in your clothing because you may forget and carry it on Shabbos. So in the same vein over here, you're not allowed to do X because you may forget and not and not do Y.
Why then do we use the supper instead of saying you're not allowed?
Because what do you mean?
Generically, you're not allowed to do anything.
No, because it depends. The Mishnah is going to mention certain things, and we'll discuss in the Gemara about why those things. The loyla, so also a person is not allowed to go to into the bathhouse, the loyla burski, or into a tannery, where they're tanning skin to make into leather, the loyla or to eat, the loyla din, or for a din tera. All of those things you're not allowed to do before Mincha, for the same reason, because you may forget and not daven Mincha. The name is chilu, but if you started a mafsikin, if you started, then you're not obligated to interrupt. You finish whatever you're doing, and then you daven Mincha. We'll see in the Gemara. Eventually, the Gemara is going to say that's only if there's enough time in the day left to daven Mincha. Tosfos mentions over here that this doesn't mean even if he started the Heter. It means even if he started the Iser. So let's say, in other words, we're going to see in the Gemara, one possibility is we're talking about half an hour before Mincha Gdolah. We're going to see in the Gemara a couple of possibilities. So let's say, it doesn't even have to be whatever, sometime in the afternoon, the person began one of these things and then didn't realize or didn't pay attention to the fact I'm supposed to have daven Mincha first. Once he started one of these things, he's not obligated to interrupt as long as there's enough time in the day to finish whatever it is he was going to do and still daven Mincha. The Mishnah finishes off. Enough time to daven Mincha. Mafsik and liquorous to do whatever it is that he's doing, and then to daven Mincha. Mafsik and liquorous Krishma, you have to interrupt to say Krishma, because Krishma is Daraisa. The in Mafsik and Litfila, you're not obligated to interrupt to daven Shemana Esrei, because Shemana Esrei is only Dirabanan. Now, the Gemara is going to point out, isn't that the same thing we just said? We just said, Yiskilo and Mafsikin. So the Gemara is going to end up explaining that these last words, Mafsikin Likus Krishma, the in Mafsikin Litfila, are actually talking about a different game. So later on Daf Yalef, we're going to get to what that means. Krishma is Daraisa, Tfila is Dirabanan. According to the Rambam, the basic concept of Tfila itself is Daraisa, but the concept that you have three times a day and you have to have certain times and so forth is Dirabanan. So that's what we're talking about again. Okay. Anyway, so again, the basic reason why this Mishnah is over here is, again, because it's similar in structure to the next Mishnah. Don't do X because you might accidentally do Y. So put this one first, just because it's a short thing. It's one Mishnah and the Gemara on it. And therefore, like, you know, we'll dispose of it, we'll get it over with, and then we'll get on to talking about Hilchos Shabbos in Hilchos Shabbos continuously. With that said, there are Achronim give different other reasons why this Mishnah is over here. The Pnei Yeshua mentions, for example, in particular, why does it mention the barber separately? It should mention all of them together. Lo yeshiv adam l'fnei ha'safar v'lo yikonos l'melchus v'lo yilbruski, etc. Why put the safar as his own category? And he says, because we're going to see in the Gemara that one, he says, we're going to see in the Gemara that one possibility is the type of haircut we're talking about is the type of haircut the Kohen Gadol used to get. The Kohen Gadol says we take a haircut every Erev Shabbos. Therefore, it's appropriate to talk about it as an introduction to the dinim of Erev Shabbos. No, that was the king took a haircut every day. Melech biyof yetech zenei nech. The Kohen Gadol once a week, and the Kohen Hedyeh had to be at least once every 30 days. So the Kohen Gadol would take a special haircut, and we're going to discuss that haircut in the Gemara every Erev Shabbos, so therefore it's an appropriate introduction to the halachas of Erev Shabbos. Also, of course, there's the idea, when it comes to bathing, the person is supposed to take a bath on Erev Shabbos for Kavod Shabbos, so therefore it goes in also.
The Kriyat Shema of Shachris and
Arvi is our life cycle. Yeah.
Also?
Yeah, yeah, we did mention an opinion. We learned in Brachas, we did learn one opinion that maybe it's only Zerabanan, but the majority opinion say that's Zeraisa. There is a machlokas we're showing how much of it is Zeraisa. Is it only the first pasuk? Is it the whole? Is it the whole first parasha? Okay. All right. So the Gemara starts. Hey, samoch l'mincha. When we say that you're not allowed to do these things that we listed in the Mishnah, getting a haircut, going to the bathhouse, going into a tannery, eating, or a din Torah, five things. So what we said, you're not allowed to do them samoch l'mincha. Hey, samoch l'mincha. Which samoch l'mincha do we mean? Which time of mincha do we mean? Ilema l'mincha gdoila. Do we mean a half hour before mincha gdoila? Mincha gdoila being 6.5 hours into the day, which is the earliest you're ever able to daven mincha, the reason behind that is because that was the earliest they ever brought the korban tamid in the Beis Mikdash. Now what it is like this. Usually, we learned this in Brachos. Usually they would shech the korban tamid 8.5 hours into the day and finish offering it 9.5 hours into the day. And after that, you weren't allowed to bring any other korbanos during the day. So usually that would be the time. So usually they would finish after that, no more korbanos for the rest of the day, right? So usually they would finish it by 9.5 hours into the day, and the reason was they would make it later than usual, in order to allow time in the day for people to bring korbanos. So that's why 9.5 hours into the day, let's say on a day when the sun rises at 6 and sets at 6, mincha k'tana is called, would be at 3:30 p.m. So that's what mincha k'tana is. That's the ideal time to have a mincha, is from then until shkia. Then you have, suppose that Erev Pesach came out on Mincha Gdolah, that's what I was about to explain. So now Mincha Gdolah is 6.5 hours into the day. That would be the earliest you could ever bring the Korban Tamid, because in theory you could bring it right after Chatzos, but it takes time, it takes a certain amount of time after Chatzos to notice that the sun has shifted position and that the shadows are beginning to lengthen, especially the Gemara mentions in Yuma and in some other places that the walls of the Beis Mikdash weren't perfectly vertical, they slanted a little bit inward, like you have the coastal nowadays, it's like that, it's a little bit wider on the bottom and the narrow towards the top. So therefore it took a half hour for the difference in the shadows to be noticeable. Now, usually on a regular day, that wouldn't matter. But when Erev Pesach came out on Erev Shabbos, the rule would be like this. You can't, the Korban Pesach is one of the few korbanos, almost the only one, that you offer after the Korban Tamid Shabbat Habayim. You bring the Tamid Shabbat Habayim, then you bring the Korban Pesach. So even on a regular Erev Pesach, they would move up the Korban Tamid Shabbat Habayim a little bit to give enough time for people to bring their Korban Pesach. When Erev Pesach comes down on Erev Shabbos, you also need time for everybody to roast their Korban Pesach for Shabbos, because you can't roast it on Shabbos. You have to put it in the oven to start roasting before Shabbos begins. We're going to learn about that at the end of our Perek, actually. So therefore, they moved it up to the earliest possible time, 6.5 hours into the day, 12:30 p.m., let's say, and that way there'd be enough time. That was that minimum observer. Right. So now the Gemara is asking.
In a day of 12 hours,
It would be 12:30. Well, it comes before Kana. It's called Gdolah because it's a larger amount of time. Mincha Gdolah runs for 5.5 hours. Mincha Gdolah runs for 5.5 hours, from half an hour after Chatzos until Shkia, whereas Mincha Kana only runs 2.5 hours. So therefore, that's one called Gdolah.
The time after Shkia is greater than Mincha Gdolah than
Mincha Kana. The time left till Shkia. So, hey, samoch l'mincha. So when we say samoch l'mincha in our Mishnah, which time of mincha do we mean? Ilema l'mincha gdoila. Do we mean you're not allowed to do any of these five things in the Mishnah a half hour before mincha gdoila? Am I lying? Why ever not? You have 5 hours. You have 5.5 hours. You have 6 hours from chatzos until shkia. That should be plenty of time to do these things, to get a haircut or take a bath or whatever, and still have time for mincha. And on top of that,
six or six and a half hours.
Well, it starts with 6.5 hours in the day. A half hour before it. Samoch l'mincha would be a half hour before it. So that means already from Chatzos, you'd be also to do these things. Why not from Chatzos until the end of the day? You have plenty of time to be able to take your bath or your haircut or whatever. In fact, the Pnei Yehoshua says the question is even bigger, because mincha gdola is not really the ideal time to daven mincha. You daven that if you don't have a choice, if you're not going to be able to daven later in the day. The ideal time to daven is mincha kana. So why would the chachamim be preventing you from taking a bath or a haircut or what have you when it's still hours until mincha gdola, until mincha kana? So what do you mean then? Okay, so you'd have to say the Mishnah is talking about half an hour for mincha kana. So fine, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, let's say. So what do you mean, though, but what do you mean the Mishnah says if you did start one of these things, you don't have to interrupt. You can finish what you were doing Why is that? Name a Kemet Kevit Kyuk to the Rabbi Shurban Levi. Would we have to say then that our Mishnah contradicts Rabbi Shurban Levi? To Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi, Kivin Shigiyaz Man Filas HaMincha, once the time for Mincha has come, a person is not allowed to taste anything before he eats, before he davens mincha. So according to our Mishnah, we would say it's not like that, because, okay, he shouldn't have started, but the fact of the matter is, he's saying you're not allowed to taste. In other words, you have to interrupt your meal. You know, according to Rabbi Shurban Levi, it would come out, you have to interrupt your meal and daven.
Whereas our Mishnah says,
whereas our Mishnah is saying you don't have to interrupt, right? And again, Tosfos points out, if we were to say that our Mishnah is talking about imitzchilu meant they began the heter, they began before the deadline, fine, then it wouldn't be a contradiction to Rabbi Shurban Levi. But if you were talking about, we said that our Mishnah means imitzchilu and maskikin, even if they started the iser. So after 3 o'clock, let's say the guy started the meal, and yet the Mishnah is saying he doesn't have to stop, he can finish his meal and then daven mincha as long as there'll be enough time in the day for it, whereas according to Rabbi Shurban Levi, you can't do that. Now, how does our Mishnah work? It doesn't seem to work with either Mincha Gdola, because there's no reason to ask for him so early in the day, or Mincha Kana, because then how, according to Rabbi Shurban Levi, you shouldn't be able to, you should have to interrupt your meal. So there's more answers like this. Look, so no. La'olam samach l'mincha gdola. After all, we are talking about that it's before Mincha Gdola. So from Chatzos to now. But we're not just talking about any kind of haircut. Over to Spodus ben Elosa. We're talking about he goes to get a ben Elosa haircut. Now, this is the haircut of the Kohen Gadol that we were just mentioning. The Kohen Gadol, we said, took a haircut every Erev Shabbos, and he was supposed to, based on a pasuk in Yechezkel, he was supposed to have his hair cut in such a way, it's called the Rosh Shalzeh Vitzad Ikre Shalzeh. The tip of one hair touches the root of the hair next to it. So it was a very complicated thing to do, obviously, to arrange his hair like that, that every hair should be arranged like that. So that was the kind of haircut that the Kohen Gadol had, and so the Gemara mentions in Masechta Nedarim that there was a guy named Ben Elosa who was Rebbe's son-in-law. Being Rebbe's son-in-law, he was very rich, because Rebbe was very rich, and he married into this guy therefore came from money and married into money. He spent a huge amount of his fortune learning how this haircut of the Kohen Gadol should be done. Now, he lived 100 years or so after the Churban, but he wanted it to be known and to be remembered, and he spent a huge amount of money on it. And therefore, it's named after him for all time. That haircut is called Tisperus Ben Elosa. So he has that skus that he's remembered for that. So therefore, so...
Again, this Tisperus is arranged, how is it?
So it's arranged that the tip of each hair touches the root of the hair next to it. So what that means exactly, I don't know, but whatever it is, it means exactly...
The tip of each hair is independent.
Okay, but so it means, in other words, you have each hair grows out of a root, and then you have it grows upwards, so they would style it in such a way, they would style the hair in such a way that it would bend over and touch the tip of the root of the hair next to it. Apparently you can. Okay, it's a very complicated do, which is why Ben Elosa spent a fortune trying to learn how to do it. Anyway, the point is that's a very complicated haircut. So then you could easily have a person goes for such a haircut at Chatzos, and he's still at it, calls the Shkia. So therefore we're saying he shouldn't be doing it. The loyal merchas, and when he says he shouldn't go into the bathhouse, we mean the kula milsa de merchas. We don't just mean that he's going in there just in order to go into the shvitz or something. We're talking about he's going in for the entire process. He's going to wash his hair and his body and in hot and cold water and shvitz and so forth, and that kind of thing can take a long time. And v'loy l'burski means l'burski g'dola. When we talk about he shouldn't go into a cannery, we mean it's a very large cannery. There's a lot of skins over there. There's a lot of work to be done with them. So then even he goes in there, chatzos, he can easily get busy over there and be busy until shkia. And the lechol besudav dolo. When we say he's not allowed to eat, would mean we're talking about a big meal. We're not just talking about he's going to eat. He's going to eat lunch. We're talking about he's going, let's say, for a wedding or a bris or a sheva brachas or what have you.
Aside from the fact that we want to have last time on Shabbos comes.
No, no, no. Again, this is not only on Shabbos. This is not only on Erev Shabbos. This is throughout the week. Every day, mincha. Yes. And, which, mind you, yeah, you're right, actually. In fact, Tosfos mentions over here that on Erev Shabbos and on Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov, actually, yeah, you have different rules. You're supposed to stop eating earlier in the day because you have to have an appetite for Shabbos. That's true. But here we're talking about weekdays as well. Okay. And below the din means v'tchilas din. When we say you're not allowed to go to a din Torah, it means the beginning of the din Torah. So there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot of arguments and counter-arguments and then looking up things in poskim or whatever. And again, it can get, you can get easily, you start at chatzos, you can easily be still very busy with it kamash din. Okay. So that would explain, therefore, that we are talking about before Minchas Dolah, but each of these things, it can be a very long, drawn-out process, and therefore the Chachamim don't want you to be doing it a half hour before Minchas Dolah. That's one answer. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov says, here's a different answer. No, we don't have to say that. We could say we're talking about a plain old haircut, not Ben Elasa's haircut. Then in that case, why shouldn't you do it? So what's the problem? But the Chachamim don't want you to sit down to a regular haircut, even a half hour before Minchas Gdolah, let's say. Because the Chachamim made a gzeira because the scissors might break. And then the guy has to go find another pair of scissors, and it's going to take time. And meanwhile, time is going to be passing. Which the Bogan Avram wants to say in that case, then maybe if the guy has several pairs of scissors, then maybe it's not an issue. Okay.
These days are no scissors.
Well, razors, whatever, same difference. The point is, if let's say the barber has... that's what I'm saying, machines, yeah, so shavers, whatever, yeah, machines. So yeah, okay, if the person has, let's say, more than one machine, then maybe it's not an issue yet. Okay. Although maybe not. I guess you could say maybe we should make it clear. If there's a power failure, he won't be able to use any of his machines unless he has cordless ones. I don't know. The loyal. We'll talk about soon actually what the actual halacha is. It's not so simple. But wait. Okay. The loyal mochas. We're saying that when the person shouldn't go into the bathhouse, we're saying it doesn't have to be the whole bathhouse procedure that we could be saying before. It could even be just lahazia. He goes in there in order to schmitz, in order to sweat. But lazia ba'alma, just in order to sweat. But lachchila amai loy. Nevertheless, says Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, the Mishnah might be saying that lachchila, we don't want him to be doing that a half hour before mincha either. And again, we'll see soon whether we mean mincha gdolah or mincha k'tana. Gzera shami yis alfe, because a gzera he might faint. He might faint from the heat of the sweating, and then he's not going to be able to daven mincha in time. And the loyal burski could even be la ayuni ba'alma. When we say you shouldn't go into a tannery, doesn't even mean that there's, like we said in the first answer, that there's a huge amount of skins there, and it's the very beginning of the processing, and there's a lot of work to do. We could even be talking about it's already mostly done. He's just going there in there to check on things. But lachatchila amai loy, nevertheless, lachatchila, we don't want him to go in there. Because he might see that something is going wrong with his merchandise, or mitzvah, and then he's going to get distracted, and then he's not going to be able to daven with kavanah. Because during the whole tanning process, you could have the skins are starting to spoil, let's say, and then he's going to get concerned about it, and then he's going to be too. So again, with all these things, what we're saying is, in Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's answer, we're saying that explains why you're allowed to continue with it if you started. Once you started, then fine, the Chachamim are not going to force you to stop because of these zeres, because the scissors might break, or because he might faint, or whatever. But lachatchila, you shouldn't be doing it because of these concerns.
Why are you allowed to go to Bas Mechatz if there's a Dalat Sakana, like fainting, which is endangering your life?
First of all, fainting is not necessarily a danger to life. But nevertheless, it's a chance, and there's a chance, and a person needs to bathe. Oh. A person needs to bathe. If a person doesn't bathe, they're for sure going to get sick. Yeah. There's a concept called Shema Psoim Hashem. There are things that people regularly do, even though there's a certain degree of danger in them, and we say Hashem protects the simple. So in other words, there's certain things. Either you are obligated to preserve your health, and you are obligated not to do things that are known to be dangerous. But when you have something where there's a slight risk of something, but on the other hand, it's a normal thing that people do. The fact is, people do need to bathe, and they didn't have hot and cold running water in their houses to be able to do it. So you have no choice. Yeah, I mean, for that matter, we learned in Brachas, you also have the possibility that the floor might cave in and the person might be in danger over there. But never. Again, you go, you do the normal thing. You take precautions. If you find reason to think, for example, that this bathhouse has not been maintained in a long time, and the floor is more likely to cave in than don't. But otherwise, yeah.
Shem Shem is in Howell.
Shem Shem is in Howell, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Deloy Lessel continues Rav Acha by Yaakov. When we say an our mission ain't allowed to eat, could even mean Mitzvah Ketaneh. It could even mean a small meal. So we're not talking about a big meal like a chasana or whatever. Even a regular meal. L'chatchila amai loy, but why l'chatchila should he not be doing that a half hour before mincha? Dilma osi l'am shochi. Because after all, he may continue. He may just end up sitting there longer and longer and eating more than expected. And then he's gonna forget about mincha. Well, okay, so wait. We're going to talk about soon what Rishonim say on that, but wait. Okay. V'loy l'din, and we say that he shouldn't go to a din Torah, means even the Gemara din. Means even we're talking about the end of the din Torah, it's just a matter at this point of giving the sack halacha. Still, l'chatchila, he shouldn't be doing it before mincha. Why not? Because after all, he may find a reason to give a different sack din, a different reason that he didn't think of before. The sofa din, and then we have to cancel the din and start all over.
That's based on
that can happen. So all these things, therefore. Okay. So now you have machlokes rishonim. What? First of all, in the end, then, given, so we have two answers over here. We have one answer that we're talking only, for example, about a very large meal or a very complicated haircut or whatever, and that it applies before Mincha Gdola, or that we're talking about even a small, even a regular haircut or a regular meal, but Rav Acha bar Yaakov did not specify whether he meant before Mincha Ketaneh or Mincha Gdola. So what is the halacha on that? So you have the Rambam and the Rif and a couple of other Rishonim learn that it means that we have to be Masmir, that even a half hour before Mincha Gdola, l'chatchila, you're not allowed to do even the regular kind of these things, a regular haircut, a regular bathhouse or whatever, a half hour before Mincha Gdola, and of course not before Mincha Ketaneh. You have Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim learn that, no, what it means is that you're not allowed to, a half hour, you're not allowed to do a big one. You would be allowed to do a regular meal in Mincha Gdola. It's only, the halacha should be like the first lashon. Now, usually when we have two answers in the Gemara, usually the halacha is like the second answer, and that's why the Rambam and the Rif passed them like the second answer. Tosfos says, given that the first answer over here was given as some of the Gemara, it was just given anonymously as in the Gemara, then it means, in other words, it comes from Rav Ashi's Beis Medrash, and Rav Ashi being the one who arranged the Gemara, therefore the implication is the halacha is like him. So only when it comes, for example, to a big meal would there be a problem, but when it comes to a small meal, there'd be no problem before Mincha Gdola, only before Mincha Ketaneh.
That
arranged the Gemara, yeah. He took all the material from the Amoraim before him and arranged it into the Gemara as we have it. So therefore, Tosfos learns that you would be able to have, for example, a small Suda, you would be able to have before Mincha Gdola. Only a Suda Gdola would be Osir. So not like an Acha Bayata, Tosfos says. Then you have other Rishonim who learn, for example, a Baal Amar learns that this whole thing was only meant in order to make it work according to Yeshua ben Levi. But you have a Gemara that we learned in Brachos that implies that the Halach is not like the Yeshua ben Levi anyway. So in that case, there's nothing to talk about, they say. In that case, then we go back to the Gemara's original assumption that... According to the Baal Amar, for example, there'd be no problem doing anything before Mincha Gdola, even a large soda or whatever. And before Mincha Ketaneh, maybe, okay, there'd be a problem with a big soda. You have three or four different opinions among the Shonim. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings all the opinions. The Mechaber brings the opinion of the Rambam, who's the most machmir. The Ramah brings the various other opinions that are makel. And the Ramah writes that in any case, the minhag nowadays is to be makel on a lot of these things for one thing, because nowadays, he says, because we can be tzomach on nowadays, you have the shamashim call people to shul. Or nowadays, I guess the equivalent, because a person has an alarm or whatever that tells them what time mincha is, and therefore there's less of an issue that they're going to forget and not go to mincha.
That was the time of the...
And so in the times of Ramah, for example, you have the shul clappers would go around and knock on people's doors telling them it's time for mincha, so therefore you have less of an issue that you're going to forget and not go.
So
nevertheless, it says in Shulchan Aruch, it is better to be machmir, and for example, not to have, let's say, for example, a big meal that you're going to start before you daven mincha. But if you did, you have what to be tzomachan if you do.
Based on this Gemara, what happened once the Rebbe came back at 10 o'clock at night? Should we have waited to daven mincha, or should not?
Pashtus, we shouldn't. We're not talking about all of this is when there's still time left to daven. But I don't know. Okay, you're here 10 o'clock at night. Way too late.
No, no, no. In the afternoon, people say we have to wait for the weather.
At some point, I guess they should have gotten, but I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm not sure. Okay. Onward. Okay, so again, so the technical halacha is better to be machmir, but if a person is makel, they have there's definitely poskim that they can rely on, especially nowadays where it's much more common that people know and then have reminders and whatever what time mincha is. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah that all of these things, we said im hitzchilu ein maspik, and if you began, then you don't have to interrupt. So we have to figure for each one of them what's considered beginning. What is considered the beginning of the haircut? Where then we say he doesn't have to interrupt. That would be once they put the blankets or whatever, the thing that the cover, the apron that they put over the person when he's getting a haircut, when he puts it over his clothes, then it's considered the beginning of the haircut. Literally means on his knees. I guess maybe in those days they only put it on their knees. They weren't worried about their shirt, or maybe it just means on their knees and on the rest of their body. Okay. What's considered the beginning of the bathhouse is once he takes off his ma'af paratoi. Rashi explains ma'af paratoi means a sudar, means his turban that he wears on his head. So he takes it. That's the first thing a person takes off when he's getting changed. So therefore, once he takes off the first item of clothing, then anyway, the Rambam learns the other way around that ma'apartre means his undershirt. So it's the last item of clothing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, once he does that, then it's considered the beginning of the bathhouse. What's considered the beginning of when he's involved in the tannery? That would be Mishayitra Bank Seifon, when he ties his sleeves behind his between his shoulders. Like you don't want, you're going to be working, you need to roll up your sleeves, and you don't want them falling down and getting into, you have all kinds of disgusting things over there in a tannery, you have dirty water and whatever. So you roll up your sleeves and you tie them in a knot behind your back so that they're out of the way while you're doing the work. So that's the beginning of the tannery process. What's considered the beginning of eating? So here you have a machlokes. Rav Omer Mishayit, not really Macholikus, I think I was going to say. Rav Omer Mishayito Yadav. Rav says once he washes his hands. But Rav Chanina Omer Mishayatir Chagurda. Rav Chanina says once he loosens his belt. And then once it's Volei Pligi, they're not actually arguing. They're giving two different definitions for two different types of people. Holon v'holohu. One is for us, meaning the people of Bavel, and one is for them, the people of Eretz Yisrael. The people of Bavel, Rashi described, used to wear very tight belts. In fact, you actually have a Gilyan HaShafer here, Rabbi Akiva Eger, references a pasuk in Yechezkel that mentions that already in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, the Goyim in Bavel were distinguished, were noted for the fact that they wore belts. As opposed to they wore belts which other peoples in that area didn't necessarily, or at least didn't wear all the time the same way. So apparently at some point, the Jews who lived in Bavel took over that style. So they would wear their belts very tightly. So therefore, they have to loosen them before they eat.
They're not supposed to do what the Goyim do.
But what you have is sometimes you have a style that the Goyim eventually abandon, and then Jews take over. You have, for example, you consider, let's say, for example, a strimel and a bekesher, a kapata or whatever. It used to be the kind of thing that the Polish nobleman several hundred years ago used to wear, that kind of thing. But eventually they gave it up. Style changed, and Jews took it over, and it became, you know, we always think of it as a distinctly Jewish type of dress. But if you lived 500 years ago, you saw a person walking down the street with a strimel and a kapata, it wouldn't be a yid, it would be a poet. Yeah, you know, style change. Yeah.
That was a good thing.
But this particular thing of wearing a belt very tightly was a style that started in Bavel, and eventually the Jews of Bavel took it over. So therefore, they would have to untie their belt before they eat. In fact, you have the Bala Turim points out on the pasuk in Parshas Vayera, the echa pas lechem, the word echa. If you take the letters of it backwards, it stands for Hater Chagurda Kodem Achila. Untie your belt, loosen your belt before you eat. And the words Pas Lechem, forward, stands for Pen Tovri Lidei Choli Me'ayim. Otherwise, you might get a stomach ache. So you have to loosen your belt before you eat.
Yeah.
So in Bavel, they would do that. So in Bavel, they would have to loosen their belt. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, where they didn't wear their belts so tightly in the first place, then therefore they would just able to wash their hands. That was the beginning of the meal for them. So again, Rav and Rav Chanina are giving different definitions one for, well, given that, now Rav's definition about Mishnah Yisrael Yodov works for the people of Eretz Yisrael. Rav Hanina's definition works for the people of Bavel. Now, what it is the other way around. Rav lived for many years in Eretz Yisrael, fine, but eventually he moved back to Bavel and spent the rest of his life there and became the Rosh Hashiva there. Rav Hanina was the Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael. So why are they giving to the opposite groups? So Tosis explains, because Talmidim used to go learn Torah very far away from home. That way they'd be less distracted with things that are going on at home. So therefore, most of Rav Talmidim and Bavel would actually be people from Eretz Yisrael who came to Bavel to learn Torah. Most of Rav Hanina's Talmidim and Eretz Yisrael would be Bnei Bavel who came to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. So each one kept their minhagim. So therefore, Rav Hanina's Talmidim, being originally from Bavel, wore their belts tight, and therefore they'd have to loosen them, and therefore he's telling them, once you loosen your belt, then it's the beginning of the meal for you. Whereas Rav is talking to his Talmidim from Eretz Yisrael, who are now temporarily residing in Bavel, and telling them, you don't wear tight belts, therefore for you it's when you wash your hands.
Why would the Talmidim of Eretz Yisrael go to learn in Bavel when the learning in Eretz Yisrael was much more...
Because that's the thing. Heavy Golel and Kom Torah. You should always travel away to learn in a place of Torah. And it's like this. They're going to learn better over there because they're going to be less distracted by what's going on at home. Okay. So in this connection, speaking of belts, Omer Abaya says, here's another din in connection with loose and with tight belts. Hani Chavin Bavloi, our friends, our colleagues in Bavel, and Abaya himself lived in Bavel. Lamanda Omer Tfilas Aris Rishur, according to the opinion that says, which we learned in Brachas, Machlokas, about whether Tfilas Aris is Rishur or not. Now, nowadays, we say everybody has accepted it as Chayva, but technically it's considered Rishur, which is one reason why we don't have Chazor Sashat by Ma'ariv, because there's no Chayva. Kurishra, they're right. But given that, according to the opinion that Philip Avis Rishus, which is actually the halacha, given the shara lehem yonei lo metrachinim lei, then the din would be, once a person has loosened his belt for the evening, then we don't require, to eat supper, we're not going to matriach him to interrupt his meal and put back on his belt and daven. He's allowed to finish eating and then he can daven. Whereas according to the opinion that Philip Avis is required, then you would require him to stop and put on his belt and daven by. Now, Tosis points out, what about Kriya Shema? The one possibility is he already said Kriya Shema, let's say. So the question is, why? What do you mean? Mincha, definitely everybody agrees, is required. There's no opinion that says that mincha is optional. We said that if you started a meal, and then you don't have to stop and daven mincha. Right? And Rechamina had said that once you loosen your belt, it's considered the beginning of the meal. So why should you not have to interrupt to daven mincha, but you do have to interrupt to daven ma'ariv? The answer is that when you're eating in the afternoon before mincha, you don't usually drink and get drunk. Therefore, there's more likely you're going to be able to finish eating and still be able to daven. Okay, we're talking about the retinue. As opposed to when it comes to the nighttime meal, you're not going to be doing anything else during the day, so people usually tend to drink more and get drunk, and therefore there's more of a possibility that he's actually going to get drunk and not be able to daven ma'ariv, and therefore Abaya says, so it's one thing, if we say tefillas avos rishus, it's fine, you can finish your meal, and if you don't end up davening ma'ariv, it's not the end of the world. But if we say tefillas avos chayva, then you're actually going to have to interrupt. Now, Tosfos points out, even during the midday meal, even during lunch, people do drink a little bit, which is why we don't have duchening by mincha. Because once a kohen drinks a reviyas of wine, he's not allowed to duchen. But a person drank a reviyas of wine, they can still daven. Only when a person drank more than that, and they're actually feeling drunk, they're actually feeling a little tipsy, are they not able to daven. So therefore, that's what we're talking about. In the afternoon, a person might drink a little wine with a meal, but in the evening, he's likely to drink much more.
Even if he's a kohen, he's allowed to daven mincha. If he drinks,
what is it? No. If a person drank a little bit of wine, he's allowed to daven mincha because he's still coherent. But once a person drinks enough to start feeling tipsy, then he's not supposed to daven. If he drinks, there's different stages. And if he drinks to the extent where the extreme is, it's called shichrus eshaloit, he's a drunk as loit, then he's caught with more mitzvahs. Then you have a stage which is not quite as much as that, but like where he can't speak coherently. If he were in front of a king, he wouldn't be able to speak coherently. Then he's not allowed to daven. You have a stage before that, which is called shosri, where he's still coherent enough to talk coherently in front of a king, but he's still feeling a little lightheaded. He's not supposed to daven in that case. And then you have a case where a person just drank a reviyas of wine, and come on, and, you know, that wouldn't even give him a DUI, you know. So yeah. Okay. So that's the point, in other words, inami, or so that's one reason why to distinguish between mincha and ma'ariv, because ma'ariv is because suffer, he's more likely to get drunk and not be able to daven at all, as opposed to mincha, it's less likely. Inami, or another possibility, the mincha given to kviya lezimna, given that mincha has a fixed time, you have a deadline, you can only daven till shkia. Nirtas, therefore he's going to be afraid of getting too drunk, or of getting too involved in his meal. V'le'ofila mikra, so he's not going to get careless and forget to daven at all. Iris, given to kula leoyas, man iris. But Myers is going to figure out how all night. Loy mirta, so he's not so afraid. V'ofila mikra, and he's more likely to get careless and not daven Myers at all. And therefore, again, if we say that Myers is choiva, then we actually require him to interrupt his meal and daven Myers, because we don't want him to get careless and think, you know what, I have the whole rest of the night, so I don't have to worry about it. Okay. Yeah.